So, Simon Kuchav Beis, Sit Vav, a Stam Tiv Gai Zain Ben Yomo, Bidi Yev to Ultra Up Your Food, and wherever, let's just continue in the Chabar and skip the Ramah for now. Af Bikain, Osir Lomer Lov Kuchav Bashal Yirakos Bibde Rascha. You still can't tell a guy, cook for me vegetables, meaning even something that has no kashrus or bishalak or etc. issues in your pot, because that's using a lachachilo. We know the lachachilo we just learned in Se'if Beis, that you can't use a cliche in binyom lachachila. So the chiddush here is not only can't you cook in a goyish kli lachachila even though it's in binyom, but you can't even tell the goy to do it. So the general rule is whatever you're not allowed to do, you're not allowed to tell a goy to do. Amir la'akum. Mechin lo yom lo asir li mekachas. You can't say make me this type of spicy concoction, even if you don't use the word cook. Again, whenever you tell the guy to cook for you, or to make something that involves cooking, it's as if you did it. That's a general rule of Amir La'akum. The F, sure, perhaps, Shalidei, this is not found in the Shas, just of its seas that the Rishon have looked at, Shalidei Rakochim, meaning the people who make spices, special, expensive, spicy dishes, mutter. Shekola umnam yachm kelim kelim lachtam kelim yifkemu umenusam. That perhaps the professionals who make professional fancy dishes, you're allowed to even lachachila tell them to cook in their kelim, because that might not be treif at all, because the, I don't know exactly what these merkachas were, but they didn't involve meat or other treif ingredients, and even though generally, if you tell a stam guy to cook you something that wasn't treif, but they would use a pot that once cooked treif, but these professionals who make fancy food, that doesn't, fancy vegetarian food, let's say, they don't usually use kelim, they also use for their regular treif food, because they don't want to get any foreign tastes in their very delicate, expensive dishes, so you can assume that they just buy new kelim and use them only in the business. So that's a heter, even though it's the beginner efsher. If it's the beginner efsher, sounds like from the mechaber, we rely on that heter, me'ikra did. However, bal nefesh, yachos shedvar me'ilu me'ibi in the tarun kias, but a bal nefesh should be machmir, meaning there's room to be mekel where there's an umdana, where, based on our knowledge of the world, I don't know, every case is different, I don't know how that applies nowadays, but based on our knowledge of the world, if we assume, no, this is equipment that they buy special for their business, and they don't use for regular ham, etc., then the ikra didn't want to be mekel. However, bal nefesh should be machmir. Why? So here, interestingly, he says, particularly mechol sasuris, there's more reason for a bal nefesh to be machmir, because these things lead to tara unikios, meaning, we have this idea that macholas asuros the tamtei misanefesh. We find a number of times in Shulchan Aruch that somehow macholas asuros has some negative effect, more so than other aveiros, and therefore there's more room for a bal nefesh to be machmer even when there's room meikar than to be mekel, not to rely on svaras that are hard to prove 100%.
How much of this is under the? How much is bal nefesh being machmir? What does that qualify? Everything that we've
No. Just this particular thing of the rakachim.
Just the rakachim.
Yeah. And why? I assume the reason is because it's a judgment call of whether they use new kelim only for their business or whether they also use these kelim for their regular cooking of their ham, etc. And it's a svar we made up. Right? It seems to be well-founded in Metzias, but it's hard to be confident about it. Every case is different. So you understand how this Svara, even though Me'ikra didn't rely on it, but, it has no source in Shas, and we always know there could be exceptions, and it's very hard to know exactly what percentage certain we are. So therefore, Bal Nefesh is Machmir. Okay. If you recall, we're not going to go back. Again, most of this is Chazara. But remember that this whole sif in the first place was a machlokas between the Rambam and the other Rishonim. The Gemara says in a few places that foods that you buy from the goyim are mutter because no Saint Tam Lefgam is mutter. The oil of the goyim is mutter because no Saint Tam Lefgam. Is mutter, etc. The honey of the goyim is mutter, is mutter, etc. And we mentioned already at the end of Simon Kuf Gimel that there's a machlokas between all the Rishonim and the Rambam. Makori Yechivi Egers here says maybe you can find one or two more Makoros like the Rambam. But it's basically everyone against the Rambam, more or less. what the Gemara means when it says that oil and honey and various foods are mutter because nofsa tam lefgam is mutter. Right? The Rambam says it means that meat in honey is lefgam. And what are they going to have as treif? Meat. What else could they have as treif? Their vegetables are kosher. The meat and oil is lefgam, etc. The Rambam said it has nothing to do with Eidu Ben Yomo. That, you know, but basically, and we find this also more generally in the Gemara at the end of Masechta Avodah Zarah, besides the second paragraph of Avodah Zarah, by various foods, at the end of Masechta Avodah Zarah, the Gemara says, if you cook in a goyish kli without kashering, then, okay, well, maybe that's not such a good example. Okay, so basically we have shemen, devash, v'chuli, shalgoyim, we pass in as mutter, mishon, no saint tam lefgam, says the Rambam, because tam basar is pogim these foods, nothing to do with Eina ben Yomo, says Rov Rishonim, because stam kli is not ben Yomo. And we paskin, like most Rishonim, that stam kli is not ben Yomo, and that's why Chazal assumed there's a heter nosen tam lefgam if you buy oil or honey, etc. from the goyim. Why is a stam kli in a ben Yomo? It's a little weird, meaning, why can't a stam kli be ben Yomo? And notice they all say stam kli. If you know kli is ben Yomo, that's a different story. Right? For example, the poskim right nowadays, if you have a busy restaurant, then you have to assume that all the kelim are ben Yomo, because they cook all the time. They're a very, very busy place. But let's say stam kli. Let's say you don't know anything. Yeah, you don't know anything in particular. You just mean this can happen all the time. You know, you go to your you go to a guy's house, and you know he boiled up a pot of coffee in the pot. You know, I don't know what kind of guy cook. That's not a problem with shalakim. You go to a guy's house, and
they boil vegetables.
Couscous.
That's pretty.
They
roast
something like that, and whatever they boil up a pot of water on the stove, whatever it may be, right? They boil up a pot of coffee, you know, in a pot on the stove. Just assume stam kli and lemon, you know, it's okay. You go to your non-firm relative's house, right? There's no problem with shalakim, and they make your hard boiled eggs, right? So obviously, hard boiled eggs are made in a pot, so you assume stam lav ben yom. And why is a stam kli lav ben yom? Some kelim are being yomim. So what does the shachar bring down from all they've shown him? What's the real rule behind this? Sveik sveika. Exactly. Because it is a sveik sveika. What's the sveik sveika? That. Maybe it's ben yomo. Maybe it's not ben yomo. If it's not ben yomo, then whatever the goy cooks in it is okay. I'm not saying you can't cook it. Either way, you can't cook it. And even if it's ben yomo, then maybe the iser cooked in the last 24 hours is nosing tam lishvach b'machal zeh, or maybe the iser cooked in the last 24 hours is pogim ma'achal zeh. Meaning, whatever you just cooked now. Let's say the hard-boiled eggs. Maybe he cooked in the pot in the last 24 hours, maybe he didn't. Even if he did cook in the pot in the last 24 hours, maybe whatever he cooked gives a good taste to hard-boiled eggs, maybe it gives a bad taste to hard-boiled eggs. Or, this is quoted by the Rishonim from the the Shach quotes in Skut and Dalit, and he adds something. The Ran adds, or not, no Saint Tom. And why is this considered valid Sveik Sveika? Because remember, we said in Kvali Sveik Sveika, there are two Sveikos, and one is Matur more than the other. Even theoretically, they count as a Sveik Sveika. Basically, one suffix is maybe anything you cooked in this pot would be kosher because it's Eina Ben Yomo. Or maybe some things could be treif because it's ben yomo. even if some things could be traced, maybe this particular food is kosher because it got a bad taste or it got no taste, you know, who knows? Maybe they cooked a certain amount of certain things that if you cook this amount of eggs, it doesn't give any taste or gives a bad taste, or maybe it gave a good taste because of a sveik sveika. Therefore, it is mutter, and that's accepted. We're not kosher for the Rambam at all. That's an accepted halacha. So that is a classic question, which is dealt with by all of the Nosei Kalim. Right here. The Shach and the Taz quote a Maharshal. The Shach and the Taz quote a Maharshal, saying, "Do you have to try to find out if he used the last 24 hours or not?" Right. So both the Shach and the Taz argue on the Maharshal here, and they said, "Well, they say you don't have to ask. Why don't you have to ask? Maybe because we'll see there are other reasons also, but because." If you recall, the Ramah held in Kuf Yud Aleph that when there's a Seika, even if it's Esher Levara, you don't have to be Levara. So you don't have to ask. The big machlokas is, what if the guy tells you? What if the guy tells you that he, if he tells you he didn't use it for 24 hours, then, okay, it's already mutter. Doesn't change. What if the guy tells you he used it in the last 24 hours? So this is a big machlokas. So there are three different cases. What if the guy says that it's Ben Yomo?
Doesn't there just a brew possibility also that you do have to think about it?
So generally, we said even in Klaus Fixeka that we say if you can't easily be Mavara, you should. But look over the reason over here that everyone's Makel that you don't have to be Mavara is because even the beer is not a very good beer because the guy doesn't really have nemanus. So even the beer would be a very inferior partial beer. You can't get a proper beer because the guy doesn't have nemanus. So therefore, everyone would be Yom Tovim Fire. But what if, again, why? Because me'ikar demi paskin, you don't have to be a fire, Sveik Sveika. You can rely on Sveik Sveika without being a fire. And even though normally we're machmir, but over here, the beer would be so inferior and questionable because the beer would be asking a guy has no nemanus, and you get into all these machlokas when a guy has nemanus, when he doesn't, he clearly doesn't have full nemanus, and therefore it's not worth being the fire.
What if someone's not for himself, though?
It's the same thing. Someone's not for himself, also has no nemanus. Someone's also from, and if someone's from, that's, we'll see in 5 minutes, and but what if the guy says that it is Ben Yomo? So there are three cases. In a Stam case, Stam, the guy says, you should know, you have this food that the guy cooked, and someone says, but there's a kashrus issue. Have you cooked in this pot in the last 24 hours? And the guy says, yes. So does that make it any worse? So that's machlokes in the Marshal and all the other poskim. The Marshal says the guy is Neman, because of Marshal. But if he does tell you, then you believe him. So if he tells you he used in the last 24 hours, you have to ask him what he cooked. And if you believe, if he says he cooked something that you know would not give a good taste to eggs, then you're okay. But otherwise, you have to believe. So says, here's a machlokas, says the Maharshal that the guy is Neman, says the Shach and the Taz. And the later poskim, he's not Neman. Why? Because the rule that a guy has no Nemanus in Halacha is not only Lakula, it's also Lachumra. A guy has no Nemanus to be Mekel, to be Mat or something that you would otherwise think was Aser. And he has no Nemanus to Aser, something you would otherwise think was Mutter. And we poskim, like the Shach and the Taz right here against the Marshal, a guy has no Nemanus, Bein LeIser, Bein LeHeter. The controversial issue is what the Taz brings up here, which is a big machlokas all over the place. What if it's Mesiach Levitumo? What if it's a case Mesiach Levitumo, right? Mesiach Levitumo.
The case
that
Rebbe just said is...
Okay, I mean, I didn't mean stop. Edus, let's call it, right? The guy is made. The guy clarifies the case. What if he's Mesiach Levitumo? What if he happens to discuss, what does he say? I don't know. He says, this is really, you know, I took out my best frying pan for you because, you know, I use it every morning without fail. Or whatever the case may be, he happens to mention that it was if he happens to mention it wasn't Ben Yomo, then who cares? We already were being made without him. What did he happen to mention Ben Yomo? That is very controversial. So going neman misech fitumo lahachmir or not? I'm not getting into the whole controversy. It's really found all over Shulchan Aruch. The Taz here in this long Sukkot and Dalit is machmir on this, and it's a big machlokes. It's a big machlokes. Halach lemaisa, it's not 100% clear if you okay, I don't know if anyone on the daf points out that this is a big machlokas, but he says here at the end, he says, Achin nirelisa the tazdim overcome omer ken lefi tuma miatzol blu shum she'il v'nir and v'rm shalom is common in Yisrael. He said, "V'yaziyish lahachmir lesser tavshul sheyishol shem vashel betocho v'ra'i lazef and simin shin yud gimel, etc." So the Taz is machmir. Says the Taz, he is neman in this case. Okay, this is actually a big machlokes, but halacha l'maisa, you know, it seems to be that a lot of our friends are machmir in this case. That if you see a vitumo, we would believe him. This is a machlokes all over your dea. But it seems that the Afronim like the Taz would be machmir if you're using Siach Vitumo.
Could that be used as Slavako or not even that?
What do you mean?
Let's say he says Siach Vitumo in this kind of case, and we have other Slavako.
Yes, yes, for sure, because it's very controversial.
When you
say Eidut
up there, when you follow
a shot,
does that
mean we don't trust him, or just in terms
of Eidut, we don't trust him? But in general, we would say that
if
he's
Benyomo,
that's a problem.
No, right, let's again. Let's make this clear. Two cases. He's saying, Bekavonim, give Eidus for halachic purpose, or he's just Mesiel Bitumo. He says, Bekavonim, give Eidus for halachic purpose, we don't believe him at all in his butter. We eat it with relish. If he says Mesiel Bitumo, then it's about locus. And
what is Mesiel Bitumo?
Innocently, without knowing that it's a halachic issue, just happens to come up for some strange reason. He doesn't know it has anything to do with Judaism. It just happens to come up. The third case, the shot that Taz brings up here, is what if he says the Kavanas Eidos, but he's Neman Olav. He's subjectively Neman to you. Right? Neman Olav Kvitrei is a concept we find in the third paragraph of Maseches Kiddushin, that sometimes you believe so in his possible Eidos if you subjectively believe him based on the circumstances. So what if you subjectively believe him based on the circumstances? Sometimes this come up. You know, I don't know, someone is a housekeeper or something who gives Eidos in Yisurin, you know, and they know her for a long time, so they subjectively believe her. So you have to be at least machmir to trust that Eidos says, the Taz at the end here, he says, at the very end of Sukkot and Dalet, if he's subjectively you believe him, usher hachinami and then Rabbi Kiva Eger points out that the Mechas Yaakov argues on this. This is also somewhat controversial. What if it's kavanas eidos neman olav? Right, meaning you subjectively trust him. He's not just a stam guy in the street who you never met before. He's someone you know. I don't mean you're a trustworthy person. You're a naive person who trusts everyone. No, I mean you specifically know this person for a long time, and you know them to be trustworthy. So luckily they have known him honest to their guy. But what about your subjective knowledge? You have to be machmir based on your subjective knowledge. We find many places in Shas, your subjective knowledge makes a difference, right? In third paragraph of Kiddushin, if 1:8 says that a woman committed adultery, if the husband really believes him, then he has to divorce his wife. We find this in a few places. In Halacha, right, if a dayan subjectively believes someone, that someone's lying in court, even though they're not kosher l'eidos, then he gets a whole sugya what he has to do. Perhaps he has to accuse himself. Perhaps he resorts to various extrajudicial modes of inquiry. We do find that subjective belief is a factor, certainly l'chumra in Shas, l'kula, maybe we'll have a chance to discuss. So says the Taz, that now the goy is neman, which basically means that by the time Taz gets through with it, you would trust the goy a lot to be machmir. Because if he's speaking innocently, you trust him, and if he's being made, but you know him well and you know he wouldn't lie. Sometimes you know people well and you know they would lie. But sometimes you know people well and you know they wouldn't lie. This is also machlokas, where Akiva Ego already brings controversy about this, but almost all the poskim, here it's a vast majority of the poskim, like the Taz, that nam and a love, subjective nemanis, we believe always lahachmir. Okay, whether we believe it lahakel is a big machlokas, but certainly we believe it lahachmir. Okay,
that a non-from Jew has no nemanis.
So a non-from Jew would be the same.
But you would think that would be considered like in the subjective nemanis lahachmir for sure.
Depending on how well you know the non-from Jew.
It doesn't matter. It all is the same.
Some non-from Jews lie. Some from Jews lie. Some Goyim lie. You know, if you don't specifically know them, then they have no nemanis. But if you specifically know this non-from Jew, you know they wouldn't lie. And there are liars out there. There are a lot of dishonest people out there.
It's continued to say, Boris of Hovind doesn't say non.
Yeah, that's just because it's the case, but the halacha would be the same.
I just saw recently in Rav Asher Reis has a tshuva where he discusses eating in non from Jews' houses. Eating in houses of people who are not Shomer Shabbos. And he mentions that Rav Moshe has a chiluk between close family and non close family, lapped after people that you know well. Rav Asher Reis didn't like that, but Rav Moshe apparently. But like into the close family thing specifically, rather than...
Okay, let's just mention the Rav Moshe now, because I keep saying, you know, do we rely on subjective knowledge, l'kula? It's very easy, l'chomer. So all the cases in Shas where you rely on your subjectively believing someone who's not proper for Eidos, of whatever the standard is l'chomer. How about l'kula? Let's say someone who's a non-from Jew, for example... or non-Shomer Shabbos Jew, you know, because we Paskin, or in Moshe's case, for someone who's not much like a total atheist, whatever. Or this comes up sometimes when you have Jews who are like traditional, but not Shomer Shabbos, and we Paskin, a Jew is not Jew, and Bechal Shabbos Bar Hesya, has no nimah. So what about eating the house of someone who keeps a kosher home, or they buy kosher food special for you, etc., but they're not from? If they're traditional and not Shomer Shabbos, then there's room to be makel based on the Gemara. It says it was, a Yehuda Nesia and a Chumra de Medusha. There's a certain kind of signet ring that was usher to walk with in Rosh Hashanah Rabbim on Shabbos because it was considered carrying and not ornamental. And there was a fellow who wore this nonetheless. In the street on Shabbos, the context makes clear he did it by mitzvah. Not that he made a mistake. If someone makes a mistake and doesn't know the halacha, then we don't call them a mumer. But he purposely violated the halacha, but when he saw, I think it was Rabbi Yehuda Nesia, he saw the gadol hador, he covered it up. He stuck his hand in his pocket and made sure no one saw it, right? Like all the Rabbi Levine stories, you know, when the guy like ran away so Rabbi Levine wouldn't see it without a kippah. So that kind of thing. So, the Gemara says he's considered to not consider Machal Shabbos Farhesya, basically. They don't use those words, because it's not for Farhesya, even though he walked in front of a million Jews that way. But since when the rabbi came, he was embarrassed. He's not a Machal Shabbos Farhesya. Rav Avadya writes, this is very common in some traditional Sephardi circles, that if someone is like a traditional person, they don't keep Shabbos, but they keep Shabbos in front of the rabbi, or sometimes nowadays they keep Shabbos in front of their parents, or they keep Shabbos in front of their parents' friends, etc., then we can say that they're not a Mechal Shabbos for a Hesya, just a Mechal Shabbos for a Tzina, and they're not considered like a Goyle called Zorkuva. So let's just, I know this is a total tangent, but it's very important to remember Moshe that I should throw in. If you have someone who's not from, there are two categories. One category is, if he is... Shomer Kashrus Shomer Shabboso Beshok, that's the phrase in the Gemara, which means Varhesya, meaning he's Shomer Kashrus. If he's not Shomer Kashrus, he's no monist. There's two rules. If you don't keep something, you're not Neman. If someone is not Shomer Kashrus, they're not Neman. But what about like what they call Masorti traditional Jews nowadays? They have a lot of Sephardim in Israel. They keep Kashrus, but they drive on Shabbos. So if they keep Kashrus, and even if they drive on Shabbos, but if they're Shomer Shabbos, they're Farhesya. And says Rav Avadya, based on the Gemara, we can rely on this, even if they drive on Shabbos in front of a lot of people, but not in front of the rabbi, I remember when I was growing up, when I was growing up, it was a very different reality in Brooklyn. The Syrian community in Brooklyn, very few people kept, they all kept kosher. They all kept Taras Mishpacha. They were very strict. No one kept Shabbos. Except when the rabbi walked down the block, all of a sudden, everyone, you know, forget about driving. They hit their bicycles, and they hit their basketballs, and they hit everything that wasn't properly Shabbistic.
Spartan didn't have their bikes.
What?
Spartan did not have their bikes.
Oh, they didn't have their bikes. Fine. Okay, whatever it is. They hit all their cool Shabbos, whatever it was in those days. There were no cell phones yet. Nowadays, very different. The community is much further. Anyway, if you have someone who is Shomer Kashrus and Shomer Shabbos Meshok, they need to keep Kashrus because you're only Neman on something you keep. And they need to keep Shabbos, because if you don't keep Shabbos, then there's a general class or evaluation that you lose all your privileges. Shomer Shabbos Meshok, Afilu Rak Bifnei Harav, or something like that. Then, if you have a case like that, then you can say they're Neman. Neman, and then you can eat in their house. But what's the more common case? The more common case is, what if you have someone who's a Mechal Shabbos Befarhesya? And a Mechal Shabbos Befarhesya is considered like a goy loses all their nemanis, no matter how firm they are about everything else. Right? They're considered a Mumr L'chal Tar Kula. Either that or someone who worships idols. Right? Like, there's some guy recently in like the Haredi community in Yerushalayim, right? Let's say they worship idols, right? Even if they're strict about everything else, and that's such a common case. Then they're totally not like a goy. If they're mechal shabbos v'rehesya, or what if they're not mechal shabbos v'rehesya, or they don't keep kosher. What is a klali thing? What is a prati thing? If they're mechal shabbos v'rehesya, they're as a general status considered like a mummer and lose all their privileges, or if they worship idols, or if they don't keep anything. Or even if they keep everything, just they don't keep kosher. Or they keep some things, they don't keep kosher, and they're not neman kashrus. So then they're not neman kashrus. A mechal shabbos v'rehesya is not neman anything. Someone who eats treif is not neman kashrus. Even if they keep a kosher home, if they eat out, meaning they eat treif out, then they're not neman kashrus. So then you have eino neman on kashrus, and you can't eat in their house. So if someone mechal shabbos v'rehesya, even if they always eat kosher, then you can't trust them on kashrus. Or if someone is not makbid on kashrus, even if they keep kosher home, they're not makbid on kashrus outside their home, then they're not nem on kashrus. And here you get to this very difficult situation. Doesn't come up so much with goyim and with, you know, total reformed Jews, etc. Like, you would never have them to trust them in kashrus. Like, the guy, like, why do you trust them in kashrus? You know he's treif. You know, the total assimilated Jew, where do you trust them in kashrus? You know they can treif. The tricky part is, what about the Jew who, you know, maybe is somewhat affiliated, maybe even has keeps a kosher home, but is mechal shabbos v'rehesya, or is not makban and kashrus personally, they have no nemos and kashrus. Everything there, you can't trust them, their food is kosher. Or sometimes you have a non-from Jew who gets special kosher food for you, etc. You can't trust them in kashrus. They're not nemos and kashrus. The simple shot is, you can't eat anything in someone's house if they're either mechal shabbos v'rehesya, or they don't, they're not makbid to eat kosher themselves. That's the mainstream regular halacha. Even if they swear up and down that they got special kosher food from you, or that their house is always kosher, etc., they're not neman. This, however, creates sometimes there's a big shas of chak here, and there's a famous chiddush of Rav Moshe. Rav Moshe Feinstein, the Yerush Moshe, had a very different question of modern reality. He was back in communist Russia. You know, some of his early tshuvas were written when he was the Rav of Luban in communist Russia, before he moved to America. There was a guy, an old from Yid, who was old, I don't mean old like me. Meaning like old and frail and could not take care of himself. And he lived with his son, who was a proper communist, the Mahadran. Not that he wasn't reform, conservative, this, that. He was like a mamish communist. Anti-religious communist who worshipped the gods of Marx and Lenin. And this fellow was totally on his son. His son bought him kosher food. But how does he know he's on board with kosher food? Because the son is totally atheist, etc. So what's pshat? So what do you do in this case? So Rav Moshe, the famous Chiddush, he says, well, all the laws of Nemanos, again, it's much easier to say, oh, l'chumra, if you believe him, be macher. Rav Moshe's Chiddush, l'kula. Even though we don't find this in Shas, l'kula. We never find in Shas that l'kula, if you subjectively believe someone, you can make them based on what they say. We only find it l'chumra. And you might say, well, yeah, your subjective beliefs, you have to follow l'chumra. You can't follow your subjective opinion, l'kula. Says Rav Moshe, no, you can even follow your subjective opinion, l'kula. Ah, the Gemara says that if someone's not from, they're not Neman. No, that means that they don't have official standard Nemanus that everyone should believe them, right? If someone is Nemanus, then every Jew is obligated by halacha to believe them. No, they don't have standard Nemanus. But if you particularly know that they are telling the truth, that you trust them, then you can believe them, because that's just a fact. You can rely on facts. The question is just, if you don't know, like, how do I know I stam meet a Jew in the street? You know? I don't know. I meet a Tor Shraga Shana Aleph guy. How do I know I can trust him in Kashrus? I don't know him at all. I just met him this second. I know nothing about him. Then the answer is halachic nemanus. The halacha says that since he's a religious Jew, I can trust him on Kashrus. Says Rav Moshe. That's if you don't have personal knowledge. But if you have personal knowledge, then you can rely on your personal knowledge, even the kula. And therefore, Rav Moshe says, even though he doesn't want to rely on this, it's a chiddush and it's, you know, can easily be misapplied, but in a big shas adchak, like this old man in communist Russia who had no one to take care of him and, you know, really was dependent on his son for food. So he says, this big shas, and this guy says, I know my son wouldn't lie to me. Even though he's an atheist, I know he wouldn't lie to me and he's telling the truth and he wouldn't do that. He wouldn't trick me. And so Rosh says, you can rely on that. Even though it's like, it is a bit of a chiddush because, like, you know, you can never be sure with these things. And we actually have had many stories, like in real life, of like someone who was so nice that they like lied to the frum people to make their lives easier. You know, tell them something is kosher when it's not, because they're like, well, I don't really believe in anything, but I'm a Baal Chesed, so I want this person to have better food, so I'll tell them it's kosher. Or I don't really believe in anything, but I'm a Baal Chesed, and I want this woman to be able to sleep with her husband, so I'll tell them there was no blood, or whatever the case may be. These things happen, but nonetheless, says Rav Moshe, if you subjectively know this guy, how do you know the son didn't just want his father to be healthy and would buy trade food and tell him it was kosher because he wants his father to be healthy and he doesn't believe in God? No, Rav Moshe says, but if you know he's not like that, some people are dishonest people. They don't lie even if they have a smarter lie. Okay, that's Rav Moshe's famous kula, that you can trust someone in kashrus based on your subjective judgment. That's the chiddush of Rav Moshe. Says the Igros Moshe, but if he's Neman Olav, then you can believe him. That's Rav Moshe's famous kula. This comes up a lot nowadays. Nowadays we don't have, I don't know, I've never heard of a situation exactly like Rav Moshe's case. Maybe you could have a case like that. But this comes up nowadays a lot in terms of family situations. Sometimes you have very difficult family situations where some members of the family are from, some members of the family are not from, and, you know, it's not a shas adchak like the old man in communist Russia who would have nothing to eat if his son didn't take care of him, but it's a shas adchak of, you know, keeping the family together, and, you know, sometimes, like you say, I won't eat in your house, then you'll just push them away from Judaism more than they are already weakened. Lamaisa, the minhag is nowadays that, you know, we don't stam rely on this kula. Stam, I know some guy from work, and I know he's really honest and he wouldn't lie to me, and he invites me over to his house and says, you know, I'm going to get kosher food, etc. We make an excuse and don't go to the house. But in cases where it's a shas adchak, you can imagine all the other cases, but I'm saying the common cases, sometimes you have family shas adchak, someone's kid is not from and they want the parents to come over and maybe they keep their whole kitchen kosher just for their parents or whatever the case may be. And if their parents say, we're not going to eat there, then they want a relationship with their kid will go even further from Judaism. Or other such, you know, all kinds of difficult real life cases. Then we rely on this Rav Moshe that, I mean, sometimes you might say, no. I had one person say, I really don't trust him so much. Then Rav Moshe doesn't apply. But if you're like, no, like, I'm 100% sure then rely on their emotion that your subjective 100% is okay, even though there's no objective halachic nemus.
Where is this tshuva?
Where is this tshuva is a great question. It's I actually have a whole makoros sheet with it.
You have
my makoros sheet or you have the tshuva?
No, I have the
Yeah, so apparently Rav Asher Weiss discussed it, Yoni tells me. But I think it's in the file Yoredeya, and the title of the file is Nemanus Chashud. So let's see. Nemanus Chashud. Here we are. The tshuva of Rav Moshe is, first of all, the Rav Avadya I mentioned about the people who like keep Shabbos in front of the rabbi, you can find in Chelek Aleph, Yoredeya Simon Yod Aleph. And the Rav Moshe, you can find in Yoredeya Chelek Aleph Simon Nun Dalid. And then he discussed this a little more and tells you not to go too far in Yoredeya Chelek Beis Simon Mem Gimel. I guess some people want to say, well, whenever I know someone's a nice guy, that's good enough, Rav Moshe applies. And Rav Moshe says, no, like, don't take it too far. So again, the Rav Avadya I mentioned is Chelek Aleph Yoredeya Yod Aleph. The Rav Moshe I mentioned is Yoredeya Chelek Aleph Nun Dalad. And then he comes back to it a little bit in Yoredeya Chelek Beis Simon Mem Gimel. Okay. That was a bit of a tangent, because over here this has discussed L'chumra Ne'eman Aleph, and Rav Moshe's Chiddush is L'kula Ne'eman Aleph.
What's the objective status of someone who personally keeps the regular basic kashrus but doesn't keep higher level kashrus? And he tells you, I bought Mahadrik.
So, okay, good question. So let's say someone keeps kosher, but they don't keep the same standard as you. So then we assume, since they keep kosher, that they're now on kashrus. The fact that they have a different standard, but they're still now on kashrus because they keep kosher. They just have a different shita than you do. So then they're believed, and what if they say, you know, we bought you Mahadrim, etc., then they're Nemanis because they keep kosher. The fact that they're different than Hagim and practices about the details doesn't change that.
It doesn't matter if they don't Tashin or Kalim.
So that's a general question, like, you know, would you eat Mahadrim food from someone's non-Mahadrim Kalim? I think the main Shin Minigo Olam is that, I'm sure there are all kinds of people out there. The main shim minhag olam, from what I've seen in all different parts of the spectrum, is that people are not makbid on the non-mahadrim kalim, or makbid on the treif kalim. We just saw this. They're not makbid on the non-mahadrim kalim. Partially, that has a makor in, there's a big machlokas of hilchas chelev between the b'nei ostreich and the b'nei rhinos. I don't remember exactly which simon it is. They had a machlokas, which parts were chelev, which parts weren't, and I don't even know the English words for they argued about something on a certain current or whatever it was. The Ostrach and Rhinus were like basically Western and Eastern Germany, and the days of the Rishon Ashkenaz, they had a machlokas ben chelev, and everyone ate on the kelim, even of those who were mekel in hilchas chelev. And that's sort of the precedent, that generally we're not makbid on kelim of those with a different minhag than ours, even though we are makbid on kelim of treif. So I'm sure there are those who are more makbid, but the general minhag is what I've seen, in people's houses, at simchas, etc., is that sometimes there are people who are very, very strict about being makbid on certain hashgachas, but they don't mind that it was made on the kelim that they previously cooked other hashgachas on. Okay, that's the mainstream in a golem. I'm sure there are those who are more machmir, but I'm not sure it's a good thing. Okay, now obviously all this, Yoni, you also need to have common sense as well. If someone says, I got you all Mahadran food, etc., and you know that, you know, that they're very confused, and they don't know what they're talking about, etc., and, you know, you can't not use your common sense, but if you have a regular, capable person who is, you know, certainly capable of understanding how to buy certain things and not other things, sometimes you have these people who are just fresh off the boat from America who really don't understand anything about any hashgacha of what they buy, And then it gets a little trickier. But let's say you have someone who's a savvy person, you know, they're a businessman, they know how to be savvy about everything, or they're just a very together person, or you know that they're very, very, very worried to be very strict about it. So using your common sense, you know, they seem to be capable of meeting your standards, then they're totally believable because they're not chushing on something, they just have a different shita.
How much say these things apply to, say, like, restaurants or something like that? Not a place without a hashgacha, but the guy is like, looks religious, and he's like, yeah, I'm throwing, like, this place is kosher.
Aha. So there it gets a little trickier. Obviously, you understand why it would get trickier, because this person has, this person has an incentive to lie. So when it comes to someone who's religious in a restaurant without hashgacha, there are three reasons why I wouldn't touch it with a 10-foot pole. Four reasons why I wouldn't touch it with a 10-foot pole, I think, I hope. One reason is because since all restaurants have hashgacha except for this guy, it's what's called a reisa. When something smells bad, that's called a reisa in halacha. You know, if you there were no such thing as hashgacha, that would be one thing. But if everyone has hashgacha but him, it just makes you suspicious. And you have to use your common sense and know when to be suspicious. Number two, if I know a guy is from, that's one thing. If you go to a restaurant and the guy acts from and looks from, you know, that's good for his business. You know, it doesn't mean anything. There are lots of people in the restaurant. They put on a big velvet kippah so that more people will buy from them, even though they're not from at all. So how do I even know this person is from the club? Number three, I don't remember the site, chapter, and verse of Shulchan Aruch offhand, but there's actually a big machlokes rishonim, whether makom cheskes iser, a stam person is them, if they're not mochzer kekashros, and the achronim write that when it comes to a business of making money, the minhag is not to trust someone unless, you know, they're mochzer kekashros, meaning even if they're part of the frum community, unless we know that they are, you know, properly, you know, that they have Yir Shamayim. We don't trust someone in business because there's such an incentive to lie. Even halachically, you know, it's not so clear whether every Eid Echad is trustworthy in all cases. We generally paskin yes in a home setting, but in a business setting, we require that you be mukhsak b'kashrus. And since we don't know who's really mukhsak b'kashrus, we require hashgacha. And the fourth reason is just as a matter of public policy. Like, you know, it's obviously is not, doesn't make sense to have a from society where, you know, it's all hefker and there's no such thing as hashgachas and everyone just has to decide in every case whether to trust the storekeeper or not. And therefore, as a matter of like sort of Kantian public policy, we should require a hashgacha. So halacha, again, there are four reasons I would never eat at a restaurant. Even Feliona became and told me it was kosher. Some of these reasons would still apply, like the last reason. Although he doesn't actually talk to me. Again, number one, because... what was the order which I said? Okay, number one, because the reyes, if everyone has hashgacha about him. Number two, because maybe he's not from at all and he's just dressing up. Number three, because even if he is from, he's not mochzak b'kashrus. And the achronim write that we require mochzak b'kashrus when he's making money in the deal. And number four, as a matter of public policy, that, you know, it would be better if all stores had hashgachas, not if all stores didn't have hashgachas. So we should act in a way that we want to fit all stores. So therefore, I think one should, under no circumstances, I mean, unless you're dying of hunger or something, under no circumstances, eat in a restaurant without a hashgacha. If we're talking about home-based businesses in a community, that's not what I'm talking about. I'm talking about a restaurant for strangers. If in your community someone sells in their home in their community because people know them personally, that's different. That's if people know them personally, then they know if they're mostly bikashrus or not. But if you're talking about a restaurant in the public sphere, then I think b'shum panim ba'ofen one should not. And that first reason is a very good one. If someone doesn't have hashgacha, there's probably a very good reason for that. And you don't want to know what it is.
Two questions. One, on the Ramosh Heter, would it apply even to a guy who's never had a lot?
It's a great question. Theoretically, it would apply even to... Theoretically, you would imagine Ramosh's Heter would even apply to a guy because the logic... Maybe I have to go back and look at every word. I would think so. Just, you know... We would never say, like, oh, like, you know, you don't want to insult the guy, you want to keep him in the family, etc., because, you know, adrabah, like we're supposed to be separate from goyim and what we eat, and it's part of the reason of for Hillel's kasher is to separate us from the goyim. But I wonder if you can have these cases sometimes where, you know, maybe you have an old person who's totally on a guy, much like Rav Moshe's case, right? You have an old person who's, whose family doesn't want to, you know, who's worse off than the guy in communist Russia. Their kids don't want him living with him b'chlal, you know, and all he can do is, you know, and he's in a wheelchair and whatever, disabled, and all he can get is a guy to take care of him, so what's he supposed to do? So it could be that Rav Moshe applied there also. Although, you know, if you ask me, you know, I think that the kids should take care of him.
Also, as far as the Reyesa point, my sister told me that a restaurant owner told them that he has kept kosher his whole life and his store's kosher, it's just that it's too expensive to keep to pay for their own food.
Yeah, I've heard that story before, but it smells. That story smells. It could be, but it could be this guy's telling the truth. But don't be a naive person. 99 out of 100 people who give that story, that's not the real story. That's a good excuse. In a real restaurant, you know, yeah, it costs money. You know, a lot of things cost money. You know, no restaurants should go out of business because they have to pay for the rabbanot and ad rabba. They should get enough more business to cover the expense of the rabbanot. If they say they don't want to spend the money on batatze de charedis because they need mashkiach tamidi, etc., I can understand that as a business decision. But to say we're not going to pay the rabbanot who's going to send the guy in, you know, here and there, and, you know, how much, you're not paying the full-time salary mashkiach. You know, this guy's mashkiach in 20 stores. So you're paying a 20th of the salary mashkiach. I don't know. It smells bad to me. It could be, but it smells bad.
I thought they often actually say, we open on Shabbos, but we can't get Ashgacha.
Right, so sometimes they say, we are kosher, but we're open on Shabbos, and we don't get Ashgacha. Yeah. So that is a reasonable story. That's a reasonable story. But, you know, maybe that's not a reisa, except for the fact that if they're open on Shabbos, you know, that also makes you wonder exactly how trustworthy are these people who work on Shabbos. You know, like, obviously that's its own reisa.
I'll follow Shabbos for Razia,
not him. No, it's pretty
bad. All right, in any case. In any case. Okay, enough.
Like, in America, when you're talking about, like a frozen yogurt place that's, like, open on Shabbos, it's owned by a Jew, like, it's not the same thing as, like, a restaurant.
No, I'm not talking about, again, I'm not talking about, we're talking about sometimes there are places where you have other reasons to know that everything's kosher having nothing to do with them on us. That's a different story. If something's a franchise, I don't know, when I was a kid, there was Carvel. And Carvel was a franchise. They only sell things from the Carvel factory. So even if you had known Nemanus and the people who ran this Carvel store, so you knew for other reasons that it's kosher. So sometimes you can know for other reasons that it's kosher. That's fine. I'm talking about some place where you don't have other reasons to know that it's kosher. Okay, sometimes you know something's kosher. That's a totally different kind of cheshbon, that you know something's kosher for another reason. There can be a million reasons why you know something's kosher. I mean, just, you know, you go to a supermarket where no one's Neman, you buy a package with the OU on it. It doesn't matter if they don't have Neman, because you have... And you have totally, you know, you have other knowledge, outside knowledge that it's kosher. So in some stores, you have outside knowledge that it's kosher, but not in any restaurants. That's only for stores that sell one or two things. Sometimes you know from the franchise that it's kosher, but that's pretty rare. You know, maybe, again, I don't know what's holding it. I'm not holding in this. You know, maybe ice cream, frozen yogurt sometimes.
Yeah.
Beyond that, I don't know if there's any stores where you know everything's kosher. You know. I don't know. Starbucks keeps going back and forth. You know, at some tkufas, they said, we checked out with the Starbucks management that everything's kosher in the store, or almost everything. Okay, but that's not what I'm talking about here. Okay, weiter. Anyway, this is a very, very important tangent. And let us go weiter. We didn't read the Ramah in Vav. Let's go back to the Ramah. We mentioned this a whole bunch of times. Bidi eved, whatever's cooked in a stam goyish pot is kosher, because ain't a ben yom. But what if it was only water cooked in a goyish pot, and you only boiled water in order to use to knead your dough, right? I think we still knead our dough with warm water. Anyone here ever make bread? I think we still heat the water to knead our dough with. So then, also Lo Shvos Amayim, the water's treif. You don't rely on this sveik sveika. Why? Because l'chachila, we don't rely on this, only b'dieved. And this water is called, even though the water is already cooked, we call it l'chachila because it's not yet a food product. It's just something we're going to use for a food product. So we haven't actually made a product yet. But something that's a food in and of itself, even if you haven't bought it yet, it's called the Dieved. We discussed all these things already, right? If I go to a Goyish kiosk, whatever, and I can choose whether to buy something, it's okay to choose to buy it because it's already the Dieved, it was already cooked. But water for making bread, which is not the thing itself, that's the food product, it's just something used for the food product, that we call, it's still a chachila, don't use it, throw it out, get more water. And if you remember, we mentioned the Rabbi Kiva Eger here, who quotes a Prima Gadim, he says there are two reasons to be machmer in water. One is because, be machmer in water because it's not yet a food product, so just throw it out. The other is, be machmer in water because it's very cheap. Right, you get it from the tap. I know technically you pay your water bill from the tap, but you know the amount of water in the pot is not shavufruta. So throw it out, and the Prima Gadol makes this very funny hachra. He says in a goyish pot, which is a less common case, you machmer on water for kneading bread, but water for drinking you can be mekel. In a Jewish pot, which maybe could be a little more shkiach. Even water for drinking, you should be machmer. Okay, we mentioned that a few times, and I think I always mentioned about Pat, and it's found in the Rabbi Kiva Eger here, quoting the Prima Gadim earlier in Siman Tzadik Aleph. Let's move on to Siv Zayin. Kishem Siv Zayin. Is there anything unique about Kelim of a Goy? Zayin. Kishem Shtam Tling Shal Ovi Kochav Meinu B'nei Yoman Kach Stam Kelim Shal Adam Ches Kishin Shal Ovi Yoman. Right? It's the same thing. What difference makes it a Goy or a Jew? Stam Kelim or Einu B'nei Yoman. No difference between a goy and a Jew. Is there any slight difference between a goy and a Jew? So yes, there is a slight difference between a goy and a Jew. Okay, you can find this in the Taz of Gandalit or in the Pesach Tshuva here, Sivkat and Vav. The difference is what we mentioned earlier. If it's a stamp to of a goy or not from Jew, you don't have to start making inquiries because they're not Neman anyway. If the stam kli of a frum Jew, then stam kli is ani min yomo, but you have to make inquiries if you can, right? As Jeremy suggested earlier. And therefore, you have to ask if you can ask. Not only that, we say that if the person doesn't know and should have known, then we put a knas and call it ben yomo because of their negligence. So, for example, if I cook in my kli, and I should know if it's ben yomo, and I don't, then we aser it. Because I'm just making excuses of being negligent, I'm not really thinking about it properly. But if, even in Jewish kli, if the Jewish owner's not around, or if no one knows, and there's no reason anyone should know, or if the owner is being very fishy, but it's someone else's food that they cook for themselves, and we shouldn't penalize them for the owner's fishiness, then we're making by Jewish kli as well. Ches. Right, a treif kli gets mixed with kosher kli, it's batel b'rov. We spent a lot of time discussing this. We filled up probably two boards in Simen Kuf Beis Se'if. Someone probably says here. Se'if, maybe Beis. Simen Kuf Beis. Okay, whichever Se'if. Simen Kuf Beis. We already discussed this. Tess. Yeshli Zohir. Milan Yechbez Obichav Kli Suda Dechayshin and Shemish Damish Behen. You can't leave your pots or dishes in a guy's house because we're afraid you might use them. Meaning, we don't trust the guy not to use your kalim. Okay, Lechatkila, this is abundantly clear. Lechatkila, it is very, very clear. You can't leave your kalim by a guy because we don't trust him not to use them. And even though nowadays people probably use strange kalim less than they did once upon a time, but nonetheless, you can't leave your kalim in a guy's house without some sort of simon, because they're afraid he might use them. It says there are filum nasan umlataknan, even if you give them to someone to fix, tzorich lasos b'hem simon. You have to make a simon shlo yishtamshem u'chavim to show that the guy didn't use them. Writing it with chalk or something that'll get erased, or a marker that'll get erased if he hooks in it, something like that. Okay, that's lechatchila. Lechatchila, we can't give our kli to a guy because we don't trust him to say that he didn't use it. and we suspect he might have used it. Lechatchila, very clearly. The question is, b'dieved, how strong is this suspicion? And this is super duper controversial. So let us read on a little. V'im aver v'lo'asa, if you do the wrong thing and you give it to the guy without a sim, shechaz v'lochem no'kom shechan agala, even b'dieved you need to kashrut because you suspect the guy used your kli. Okay, and here we get a lot of caveats. The davke im show ktsas etol mekom nine khatzi yom. Aval fi shai lochosh. Only if it was by the guy's house for about half a day. But if it's just for a few minutes or for 1 hour, we don't have to worry. Here the shach and the taz go at length. They bring a stira from later on, some kof lamed zion maybe. Where we're machmer even if you give the wine utensils over to the guy even for a few minutes. And there are many different opinions. Simple pshat is, let's go with the Taz, that, you know, it all depends on, it's not davka 1 hour versus half a day. Meaning, long enough that a stam person would need to use it or not. So it depends what kind of kli it is. Some kli we use every hour, some kli we only use twice a day. But if you leave it long enough that if it's a meal kli, it was meal time. Or if it's a drinking kli, it was being thirsty, taking a drink time. Or if it's a snack kli, it's snack time, etc. Then you have to worry b'dieved. Avalon lo lako. Okay. Why? Well, he doesn't say yet. But what's the logic? So let's see these different cases. You know, Pinyomi, you get the board for me so I can take a whole board for this. The first case, it's mutter, is if it's lafisha. Right? Why is it mutter if it's lafisha? Lachora, because we have a sfeik sfeika. Right, that's the way the Nosei Kelim here. We won't go through all the different opinions on Nosei Kelim, we'll just go through the mainstream. What's the first case? The first case is he miach etzlo lefi sha'a. Right? So it's mutter because of his fake sfeika. Maybe he never used it. So after all, Lavdaf could use it in a short amount of time. Maybe he never used it. And even if he did use it, maybe he used it with something that would be pogam or not give a tam to the food you would, the food you want to cook. Right? So, fake sfeika. Maybe he used it. Maybe he didn't use it. And even if he used it, maybe it won't give tam l'shvach to your food, or maybe it will. So this is fake sfeika, and therefore we say your kli is still mutter. The kli is still mutter because there is, and now this is different than the sfeik sfeika of a stam kli akum. Sfeik sfeika of a stam kli akum, for sure he used it. There's no heter, it's not mutter l'chachila, it's only mutter b'dieved. Over here, it's mutter even l'chachila because maybe he didn't use it. Because maybe he didn't use it. What are you going to say? You're going to say, will it make my food treif? No, it won't make my food treif. Sfeik sfeika, maybe he didn't use it, even if he used it. Maybe it's not something that gives a good taste to my food. You can say, but even if it won't make my food treif, it's still like zera drabana not to use a cliche, not to use any treif kli. No. Suffolk, maybe it's not a treif kli, maybe he never used it. So basically, what do we say? We say that it's a, you have to analyze this on two levels. On the level of the iser d'oraisa of tam ke'ikr, what do we say? We say, Sfeik sfeika, she'ein kan tam. And how about the iser drabanan? Shelo levashel bishum kli shebala iser. We say, sfeik drabanan lekula shelo nispashel bo iser. Okay. That's what we say in this case. What's another case when we are Mekel? Let's read on. Kol zek she rotzel shtamish bo bayo, as opposed to If I, here it gets a little trickier. What's the next case? Well, let's read on a little more. Okay, so let's go to this case. This is case two. All right, I'm not necessarily going in order. Two is Heniach Etzlo L'chatzi Yom. No. Heniach Etzlo Yoser Miyom Shalem. You left by the guy for more than a whole day, for 2 days, 3 days. Or Heniach Etzlo Chatzi yom ve'achar kach shaha yom shalem. Either it's in the guy's house for 3 days. What does that mean? It might be 24 hours since the guy used it. Or it was in the guy's house for 6 hours, but then you took it home and waited a day. In this case, we say it's also mutter. In this case, we also say mutter. Now, this is controversial. The Taz and the Bach disagree. Okay, without getting into exactly the difference between the Taz and the Bach, the Taz and Bach disagree. What do they say? At least l'chachila, if not b'di'avet, says the Taz and the Bach. Here, it depends how you look at it. Says the, says the Taz and the Bach. They say, Vadai Nishtamesh Bo Haroi. The guy was for sure used this kli. Once you left his house for a long time, the guy for sure used this kli. If the guy for sure used this kli, then this is just a case of a guyish kli that's Nina Ben Yomo, or that's Safa Gina Ben Yomo, that is Pashat. A guy used the kli, but 24 hours might have passed, and it's never Pashat. This is a case of regular kli shel goy. Who cares that it's your kli you just left for the guy? If we assume he for sure used it's a regular kli shel goy, and what do we assume about a regular kli shel goy? That it is aser levashel bo bli hecher, and in bishel bo the machal is mutter. That's the Bach and the Taz. The Bach does argue exactly how makpid or bilchachila, like what if it's not kasherable, but without getting into details. However, what if the Ramah and the Shach and Rov Poskim say? They say no. Even in this case, we're willing to be makel that. We're willing to be makel that maybe the guy didn't use it. Even if you left it with him for half a day, who says he necessarily used your kli? Maybe he didn't need it. And therefore, what do we say? We say it is a sveika. Maybe he used it. Maybe he didn't use it. And by the way, which side of the sveika is stronger? That he used it or that he didn't use it?
That he didn't use it.
Because of what rule? No, but that doesn't say whether he used it. What rule would make you think halachically that you would say he didn't use it? Chazaka, Cheskes Heter, right? It was Cheskes Heter. It's not like a kli you buy from a guy. And even if he used it, well, it depends. If you waited 24 hours, then it's for sure Eino Ben Yomo. But even if you kept it for a long time, then maybe it's Eino Ben Yomo. And maybe it's Ben Yomo. And even if it's Ben Yomo, maybe it's no saying tam l'shvach b'machal zeh, or it's eino no saying tam l'shvach b'machal zeh. Okay, so therefore you have a seik seika, and it is mutter, says the Ramah. However, what case did the Rama Aser. Let's remember, this is really case three.
I apologize. Case two was Shaha Etzlo Chetzi Yom Ve Lo Avar Yom Shalem Me'az.
Right? You left in the guy's house for half a day, and then 24 hours didn't pass. Meaning, if he used it, it's still Ben Yomo. If he used it, it's still Ben Yomo. Right? In this case, one second, if he used it, it's still Ben Yomo. Then, what do we say? Let's just chazer what we say here. What do we say in this case?
It has in the back. It's what the other does with
Hakula. No. The Rama says... Well, let's think of it. The Rama says you need to kasher it, right? The Rama says you need to kasher it. And let's read on in the Rama for a bit. I know this is a little complex. You give it in for half a day, and you take it back in that same day without 24 hours. The avar b'nishtam shel agalim, you use it without kashering. Yesh osur ma'ichal k'mo b'kli shuvada b'nyomo. Some people say the food is treif b'dieved. V'makom tzorech yisrael hakel b'dieved. You can make gel b'dieved. What does the Rama say? The Rama says you have to kasher the kli, and if you cook without kashering the kli, we assume the food is b'dieved. We assume the food is b'dieved treif. V'makom tzorech you could be make gel. What's the logic of the Rama? What's the logic of the Rama? The logic is. He's a little... The Taz and the Bach, I think, is very clear. We say, Vada, the guy used it. The Taz and the Bach are very clear. The Taz and the Bach are like the Klar Shita. They start with, Vadai Nishtamish Bo Agai. They always start with, if you leave it in the guy's house for half a day, he for sure used it. If he for sure used it, then it's treif. If now you're within 24 hours and you cook something, then push it, it's treif. Then, this is a... Kli shel goy sheyadua shehu ben yomo, which means aser levashel bo b'li hechsher v'im bishel bo hamachal aser. That's very clear. They assume v'adai nishtam shel goy. The Rama here hedges his bets in it. Right? He says don't use it without pasturing, and if you use it, the food is treif, but maybe it's not treif. What do we say? What is he saying here? What is he saying here?
The Rama and the Shach and Rav Poskim, who agree with Rama,
they say, let's think about it here. Let's think about it here for a moment.
I'm going to start with the Sveik Sveika. Maybe he used it. Maybe he didn't use it.
And if he used it, it's for sure not 24 hours, right? Meaning, you left him for half a day and then use it right away. So there's no havmi in Eidim and Yom.
Maybe it's no same tam l'shvach ben machal zeh, or it's eino no same tam l'shvach ben machal zeh.
Says the Rama, Bishas Hatsorah b'di'eved, you can rely on this fake seika. Right? Only Bishas only b'di'eved, Bishas Hatsorah, can you rely on this fake seika? But lechatchila, you have to kasher it. That was the beginning of the Rama. And even b'di'eved, the food you cook is treif if it's not a shas hatzorach, right? If you're not stuck. What's John the Rama? This is a little funny. Why did he use fake sveika? So all the achronim explain that the Rama is mesupak. That maybe the Issa v'Heter, the Tazim Bachar, the Bais Nisvater, maybe it's not really good suffered whether the guy used it or not. Maybe the guy always uses the kelim you leave in his hands. Maybe it's not a good suffix. He's not sure if it's a good suffix or not. So what's the yesod? The yesod is that this is controversial suffix. This is a controversial suffix. Meaning, if you left them fishah, that's not controversial. For sure it's a suffix whether you used it. If you left them for a long time, it's a controversial suffix. Therefore, what does Rama say? Use the suffix b'diyev b'shas atzorech, it's a sfeik sfeika. But l'chathilor b'diyev shlo b'shas atzorech, assume he used it. And then it's only one suffix. One suffix is l'chumra. Ah, so why in this case didn't we say the same thing? It's a controversial suffix, don't use it. No, in this case, you can rely on the controversial suffix because you have two other sfeikos. If you have two other sfeikos, then certainly we go right, so two sfeikos is enough. There's only the third suffix. Why do you need the third suffix? Demater l'chachima. Okay, as a third suffix, it's good enough and it's mutter l'chachima. In this case, you have a good sfeika. You left him for 1 hour. You're not sure that he used it. In this case, you have two sfeikos. You need a third suffix to get mutter l'chachima, unlike stam klei goyim. Okay, it's good enough for a third suffix. It's one of the two sfeikos. There, the Rama says, l'chachila, don't use it, even b'diyev, don't use it. But b'shas et chak, you can use it. That's pshat in this Rama, as opposed to the Taz and the Bach, who are just very pashut. And the Yisra Heter, for that matter. You could add the Yisra Heter here. They just say, v'ad ne'ish tam shvur goy, it's not a suffix at all. Because this is like, it's a machlok, but it's a suffix, right? We could add the Yisra Heter here if you want. Yes, Jerry.
Is this not a general rule that if you ever write it's not considered to be used to write that with a chila?
No. Now, the reason I said this fake sfeika won't work with chachila is because if you know he used it, then you have a fake sfeika that your food is kosher. But you still can't. But you have a vadai that's a treif kli and you can't use it with chachila.
We also wanted two more questions today. Would the taz and the bach still hold by this?
It's a great question. Would we say that nowadays it's different because people don't use random kalim when you bring something to a trap to the fix, he probably doesn't eat from it, etc. Maybe things are different nowadays than they were in the old days. It's a great question. I haven't seen this in the modern day poskim, perhaps because it doesn't come up a ton anyway. Meaning, what do you mean you leave your kalim by a goy? If you give it to a goy, you store to fix, that we don't have that so often. And if you're talking about you actually lend it to a guy, then he would use it. Right? So my intuition is with you that it could be that even the Bach Lent has been molded nowadays, maybe even the Ramad be molded Chachila nowadays. I just don't have any recourse for it. Yeah. And again, that's only in like a store. A private person, then I don't think anyone would be molded nowadays. Private people, if they have something, they might use it.
One more question. Okay. This was saying that it's. Maybe he wasn't built in Tom Mishpah. That's something. We ever say this by any other halachot of Tom
Mishpah? Yes, because we say that the Yisod of Tom Mishpah of Beyomim, right?
But that seems like now we're using like a separate suffix.
No, remember, Stam Kilim is a fake snake, and maybe it's not Ben Yomo. Even if it is Ben Yomo, maybe it doesn't give a Tom Mishpah in this particular food. Right? That's the Shach we used to come down with that. Tom comes from Poskim. Yeah, I know, it's invented by the Rishonim to explain this phenomenon in Shas. But it's agreed upon by all the Rishonim except for the Rambam. Again, except for the Rambam. Kivegro say, I have a deacon on Rashi, someone else is a deacon on someone, but, you know, it's agreed upon by everyone. The only person who doesn't clearly agree with it, who clearly doesn't agree with it, is the Rambam.
Do all the problem of that advice that we discussed before apply to this case too?
Well, here you're leaving it in a guy, so there's no shot. I mean, if the guy is machmir nebonis, like if the guy says, I didn't use it, then it would be the same as we discussed previously, correct?
These cases are fundamentally different from when a guy is at your own house, and then everything will come up.
So a good question. Let's read on.
Yeah.
Okay, let's read on, Rebosa. End of Sif test. Oh, lechachila yeshuzar b'chol inyan. Lechachila, you should never leave your kelim by a goy. No chachmas. Lechachila, just don't give your kelim to a goy without a simon. Afil ba'avod mishpachos o'ol lechom shaveis Yisrael. Even in the housekeepers in a Jewish house, you shouldn't give your kelim to. Shelo yachid kelim shalom v'etzlan. You shouldn't give your kelim to them. Meaning, what is the assumption here? Stam if. You know, if they're in the house the same time as a kli is in the house, then we don't have something worry. But like, give them over kelim to be in charge of, to leave them in charge of kelim. So we say that's also a chachilah aser. They might use it for treif. Right? So even your housekeeper in your house, you can't trust with the kalim. Oh, a lot of people have goyish housekeepers nowadays. And they work in the kitchen. So says the shas, if cotton tes, the ha'olam in misharinata bazeh. He's not talking about giving your kalim to a goy. He's talking about in the Jewish house. The olam, no one's not in the Jewish house. No one worries in the Jew, even the, for Jonathan, yeah, but even the chachila, no one worries about leaving their housekeeper to wash the dishes, or their housekeeper to serve the food, or whatever the case may be. Why? Because early in 17th of Yom Chesed was really the rule of Nemanus of Goyim. There's a rule called Yotzei Nechnas. If it's a guy's house, then who's Yotzei Nechnas in the guy's house? It's trespassing for me to be Yotzei Nechnas in the guy's house. But in a Jewish house, the Jews can come and go as they please. That's what Yotzei Nechnas means. You come and go as you please. Even if the guy is alone for a long time with the kalim, but the Jew could show up any minute, and the guy knows that if the Jew shows up and sees her cooking basar b'chalav in the Jewish pot, she's fired. Right? So that's called mirtat. She's afraid. So that's the rule of Yotzei Nechnas. If a Jew is, it could arrive any moment, then, and it's a Jewish house, like the Jew knows where the kalim are, he knows he could arrive any moment, or you have a nanny cam, you can't arrive any moment, then the goy is afraid to treif up the kalim, and therefore there is no problem. That's why l'chachila nowadays, people with housekeepers don't worry about leaving the housekeepers with the kalim, because the Jews are Yotzei v'nechnas. And even if the Jew goes away all day long, but still someone could come home anytime, and therefore the goy is afraid of being caught, especially, you know, if the goy lives in the house, then when the one of the goy lives in the house, they want to be clever, they can be clever. On the other hand, you know, if people live in the house, can often tell if something's suspicious. So that's why even the chachilu don't worry about it nowadays.
Yeah, someone not from who's living in your house who has no mirsas.
Someone not from living in your house who is not afraid of being caught. So that depends. Are they afraid of being caught or are they not? It might depend on the circumstances. Just because they don't work there doesn't mean they're not afraid of being caught. You know, it would depend what would happen if you broke up with them. Maybe they're afraid of being caught. Maybe you have a non-firm roommate who's you're signed on the lease and he's afraid, and, you know, if you tell him you've been messing with your kalim, you're going to kick him out of the apartment. That's also mirsas. So it depends on the circumstance. But our general minhag nowadays that we don't worry about the housekeepers is based on the shach. Yud. Just quickly, if you send food in a pot to a goy and then he keeps there and eats it, if you see that it's still dirty with the food you sent him, then it's mutter, because you know he didn't cook other food in it. But if he washed your kli, you sent food in a kli to a guy's house and he washed it, then if it's normal in your country that people wash dishes in hot water, which in our countries it is, then it's treif, because he might have washed it with hot water. Meaning, because he might have washed it with his treif kalim in hot water. So that could be a problem. Okay. Nowadays, you have to figure out, you know, all the different ways we wash dishes nowadays, what's more likely, but fundamentally, you know, maybe you could figure out this guy has a dishwasher that, you know, has soap in the right time, etc. But fundamentally, if the guy washed your pot, it could be a problem. Yud Alef, Klei Suda Shviyadu Gachav Mesiyat Vitum Ve'Omer Shachadashanim Ye'ra'ishu K'moshu Omer Botel Gozer Mianu. If you're buying from a guy utensils, and he's Mesiyat Vitumo that they're new, and they look new, then you can trust him. But some are machmir, meaning we Ashkenazim are machmir, we'll see in a moment. No, if you go to a flea market and a guy is selling dishes and he says they're brand new, even Mesiach Vitumo, he says they're brand new, and they look brand new, you can't trust them. Maybe just shine them up and selling them as new. The only thing you trust them is if it's like, you know, like Macy's and they're selling, you know, they have boxes that come from the factory, then obviously you can trust them. If it's a big store that sells in a normal way, like most normal stores nowadays, that's the Kalim Harbay, you know, they have a stock of Kalim, then what are the odds that the Kalim they're selling are not new? Anything's possible, but the odds are highly unlikely. So you can go into a store and buy normal Kalim. But if you have a flea market or something, then Even though the mechaber seems to be mekel, the Rama says yish machmirim v'chein noagim lechachila lechachila shkanaz bar mekel. You can't, even if one of the two things, one, the goyim see have to be tumo. That's not necessarily so good. And two, it looks new. Even the goyim see have to be tumo plus it looks new to you is not good enough lechachila for Ashkenazim. The only time only Ashkenazim can only buy in normal stores that sell normal manufactured items. However, b'shas adchak, we're making like the mechaber. So even Ashkenazim, if you're stuck, you're in a guy's house, you don't have any kelim. If you're stuck, you can rely on a combination of meseif kifitumo, plus it looks new to you. But that's only if you're stuck, not lechatchila. Lechatchila, just don't buy kelim in a flea market. Again, unless they're metal kelim and you can kasher them.
Not like these like websites take like the overflow that some could use once returned to Amazon and then go to one of these. Overstock, whatever. Could be someone using it and returned it.
So I'm not such a bucky in these websites.
Yet.
I don't know exactly how they work. So I'm not sure. But if it's people who sell things that are often returned, do people cook in dishes and then return? Maybe.
Do you have to kosher they cook them and then return?
I don't know. It's a good question. I'm not sure. You know, I maybe you'd want to do some research in terms of what the odds are.
Is it even a year and a that you need to be able to cover? I mean, that's not.
I have no idea. I just like, what do I know? My intuition is that even these overstock websites, you know, even if someone returned it, they probably didn't cook in it. But my intuition is that it's okay. I don't know anything about this. I'm from the pre-internet.
The one house in Nia, it's a boy for more than 24 hours, it won't be in that category. You use his house at some point. Even if you didn't use it, you have to push for that.
No, because it's been more than 24 hours since then, and our laws make him.
Okay. I was going to say, even according to Noah's question, it could be make him, because it's been more than 24 hours since it arrives at your door, since it might have been used.
Right, meaning this is talking about where, like, Minastam, most kelim on a flea market are totally used till proven otherwise. In this case, where it like seems new and someone might have used it, maybe it's more like case number 3, and then it would be mutter.
The one in the middle is 3.
Case 3, it's been more than 24 hours since then. Sorry, 3 is in the middle, because the Rama really discussed this. Okay, do what you want. You're smart enough to figure it out on your own, that you could use whatever numbers you want, just be consistent.
What does the epic you mean post? Using it or
B'diavad where? B'diavad here means post using.
In the case that we just said, that's what he's talking about. The flea market case.
The flea market case. Oh, he means B'diavad means, he says B'diavad means if, like, you're stuck and you don't have any other kelim to buy.
Not that you already bought it.
Or also if you already bought it, we would call it B'diavad. It's funny. Sometimes B'diavad means you bought it, sometimes you cooked it. You have to, each set is a little different. Here means bought. Okay. Yud Beis, Yesh Mishomer Shakaros. This is something which is certain historical time and place, and I have nothing to say about it. Yesh Mishomer Shakaros, Habos, Be Ivriyam, Shikaru Rosh, Yirak Rakoso, Adam Damos. Aser L'shtamish Behem, we should make a song out of this. Aser L'shtamish Behem, Li'ol L'macham, Ne'she'ena Chadosha, Sho'ov L'chom Shtat, Ve'minu Nikr. Some people say painted kelim. They would have these brightly painted kelim that came from Medina Sayam. Some people say the painted kelim you always have to be machber on, because they always have used ones and then paint them to make them look new and sell them. So you have to be, so therefore they're always treif. You have to assume they're treif. Okay, he makes, you know, I don't know exactly what it is, but see as well as nowadays, even if you have painted kelim, if they come like from a normal store from a factory, then we assume that they are brand new. I guess what he's saying is that if you're in the flea market, you can't trust they look new if they're painted, because they could have just been painted. Although, you know, I don't know. It's not clear how relevant this if is nowadays with our modern day manufacturing. Okay. So much for Simon Kof Kof Beis. I think we're ready to move on to Shulchan Aruch Or HaChaim. Binyam, you're going to help us out. And everyone's going to open up their Or HaChaim. Simon Tafnan Aleph. Simon Tafnan Aleph is Hilchot HaGolos Pekim LePesach, but it's not only for Pesach, because if you recall from Simon Kof Kof Aleph, what did the Mechaber say?
Ein Shabbat.
It says the halachos of kasher are found in Hilchot Pesach. So here they are. Tafnan Aleph, Dinei HaGolos Kelim. He starts with, interestingly, I remember Lichtenstein, whenever he was asked to speak about something, or even when he chose a topic to speak about, he would always start with an explanation of what he's not speaking about. So this is Dinei HaGolos Kelim. We're going to start with the explanation of what kelim we're not magil. So obviously we know which kelim we're not magil. We're not magil klicheres. because the Torah was made on Kli Cheres, she'eino yotzei de dofio li olam, that it can never be kashered from its absorption. Where is the Torah made on Kli Cheres, that it can't be kashered? Parshas Tzav, what does it say? Anyone here is not makpid on same pesuk in Baal Peh?
Right,
meaning if it only says break any kli you cook a chatas in, you might have thought, I don't know, that's like a weird zeres hakosef. But it says if you cook it in a metal kli, just kasher it with hot water. If you cook in a cheres kli, break it. Chazal understood that that wasn't based on olamas elyonim. That the Torah being made, that you can clean out the bleos from a metal kli, but you can't clean out the bleos from a kli cheres, because kli cheres are super porous and can never be cleaned. if you ever, you could try it once, you know, go buy a unglazed kli cheres. You know, they sell them for planters or flower pots, and cook in it and try to clean it, and you will see that you can never clean it. Okay, so kederes, so what do we do with kli cheres? So we know there's a machlokas between Rav and Shmuel in the Gemara in the second parak of Maseches Pesachim. Do you have to break all your kli cheres before Pesach? There is a sheet that you have to break all your kli cheres and buy new ones after Pesach. We don't pass that way. Let's look at Tafnun Aleph. Kedero shel cheres shenishtamish b'im chametz kol hashana afilo osum shosum daiso mine kvachet, meaning even if you made mamish chametz in it, not just like chametz thick food, like mamish, you make daisa, that's hot cereal, or other things made of flour, even pure chametz. Meshashvan heitev be'enin shlo yeh chametz nikarem. You just scrub them well so there's no chametz visible on the surface. Umachal shosel achar pesach. And you can keep them after Pesach. Meshashvan be'eminim shlo mino, and after Pesach you can use them for the same type of food or a different type of food, because Rav was machar and be'emino, so he just tells us that doesn't matter what you cook anything after Pesach. Okay, that's the halach, you can keep it till after Pesach. I mentioned once before, you don't have to sell your chametz. You don't have to sell, the bleus and your kelim before Pesach. Right? The Bechara says you don't have to sell anything. You have to scrub off the be'en. Right? The be'en, you have to scrub it off. But the bleus and the kelim are fine. There's no bayi rabbi not saying bleus and kelim. There's no esser to keep bleus and kelim. You don't have to sell the kelim. You don't have to sell the bleus and the kelim. Continuing, but what do you have to do with them? I said, what? The Gemara doesn't say what you have to do with them. But the Rishonim say Misvara, but you can't leave them lying around your kitchen, right? That's just common sense, because then you'll use them on Pesach, and you'll be eating chametz food on Pesach. So if do matznian be Pesach, mokum tzanua, you have to put them away someplace hidden. She'ein o rug a leilav sham, that you don't always go. Put it in some storeroom that you don't generally go. Kadesh lo yevel shabbos, so you don't accidentally use them. V'tov, what's the best thing? L'sogar mecheder, lock them up in a room or a closet. Cheder can also mean a closet. Let's niyam avtech and hide the key. Okay, that's the best thing. Meaning, he says, you could just put them someplace you never walk, like in the edges of your basement or the garage or whatever. But the best thing is to lock them up, and not lock them up. You know, you see like old movies, like all the pantries had locks, but you kept the key in the lock. You gotta lock them up and put the key someplace else, otherwise it doesn't really help. Nowadays, what do we do instead? We tape, right? Because our closets, our pantries don't come with, our kitchen cabinets don't come with locks. So instead, you want to know, where do we get the minhag that you put masking tape on your cabinets where you keep your Pesach, chametz stick dishes? You get it from right here, this machaber. Masking tape is the equivalent of in their days locking it up and putting the key away. So that's, it's not like a shtus, it's actually real halacha. You have to put masking tape on your cabinets, because if you just leave in the cabinet stand, that's not machaying the machaber. The machaber says you have to lock it and put the key away so you don't accidentally open it. It's not enough to just put it in the cabinet, because then you might accidentally open it and take it out and use it on Pesach. You have to lock the cabinet, or in our days, we put masking tape on the cabinet. That is a real halacha and not just a stam modern day minhag.
Does it have to be difficult to open?
If you put masking tape, it's difficult to open, no?
You put little things, but it's
it's an interesting question. What if, like, it's not hard to open, but you see that you shouldn't open it? I can't prove from the Mechaber, but narrowly misvara, that as long as it's like obvious that you shouldn't be opening it, then it doesn't have to be hard to open.
Well, you're not going to forget where you're the keys, and that's even easier than masking tape.
Yeah, narrowly that if it's clear that it's closed with masking tape, then, you know, like, you're not stupid. Like, you'll think, why is it closed with masking tape? You don't remember that it's Chametz and Kelim. Okay, the tremendous machlokas here. Sometimes I haven't seen so many people do it, but in the old generation, people do that all the time. In your homes, do you have like pretty kalem on the wall as decoration? It might be like an older generation thing. Your grandparents might be more likely to have it. I'm not sure. Mind you. But once upon a time, that was a big thing. You hung up fancy kalem for decoration.
Long
week. What?
Long week.
Yeah. Yeah. I think I even had that in my house once upon a time. I don't know where it went. I don't know if it's still there. We might still have one. Anyone been in my house notice if I have a fancy kli hanging on the wall? Okay, Mirza Shah. Anyway, so there's a tremendous machlokes that the Magen Avraham and Taz discuss here, because apparently it's a big thing in the old days. Can you hang your chametz de kelim so high that they're out of reach? Is that good enough? Because on the one end, they're out of reach, so you won't immediately take them. On the other end, there's no hecker to show that you shouldn't take them. Right, so it's like in between. You won't easily take them, but there's no reminder not to.
And if they fall, they'll break stuff.
Right. So anyway, there's a big machlokes. The Bach and the Taz said Usser, the Magen Avraham and the Mishnah Brewer here, Paskin, that Mutter, but nonetheless, I'll read you the Magen Avraham. The Mishnah Brewer says the exact same thing. Says the Magen Avraham. He says, well, there ain't even yoho anyway, so that's another sad lohakel, he says, etc. He says, mutter, nogu kein, mutter ramachmer tovalov bracha. Now, we pass like the Magen Avraham, mutter ramachmer tovalov bracha, which still means that, you know, what does mutter ramachmer tovalov bracha? We interpret it to mean that if someone wants to, they have the right to, but it's not proper. But it's not proper. But you shouldn't.
About like glass break fronts, people
don't
mean until they cover them up.
What about glass break fronts? Lanias daiti, like, again, there's no bali yirah, it's not usher to see. Not to mention the fact that, you know, bali yirah doesn't mean literally seeing halachically. So I don't think you have to put paper on your glass break front, but I think you do have to lock it with the key and put the key away or put masking tape on it so that you don't accidentally open it.
Masking doesn't mean out of sight?
I don't think so, because I don't see what the point is. The point is that you shouldn't use them. So I don't see a problem. Meaning, no, how about the ones high up? No one said, but you can see them. No one was worried about seeing them. They were worried about accidentally using them. So I think it's fine in the glass break front as long as you either lock them. I think I actually have some cabinet that's glass that has a key that you can lock. Or masking tape them. I think that's fine. No one in this discussion, again, the mug and the Bach and the Taz said, also because you might use them. Even if they're high up. So you take them then. How do you use them during the year? And the Magen Avraham and the Shavur says, well, they're not even necessarily clean Rishon, even if they are, they're not Ben Yomo, and even though all that's really not Mutter, but they're high up, so therefore, the Minig Olam, we can justify to keep them if they're out of reach, out of arm's reach. We don't have such tall ceilings nowadays. I don't know. In most of our houses, everything's in arm's reach. So the Maisa in our houses, right, people can reach close to the ceiling, right? How tall are our, right? Even if I hang it there, I can reach it. So in our houses, it's usser. If you have a tall ceiling and it's out of reach, and if you have a tall ceiling and it's out of reach, then we pass like the Magen Avraham Shvura. It's mutter, but I'm not more trouble of bracha. So basically, either way, don't do it. Agav, the Taz, interestingly, this will echo some things you learned previously, says, but it's okay to hang your Pesach kelim high up during the year. Why? Because even if you accidentally use them for chametz, so you'll just turn them into chametz dishes from then on. Ah, maybe you'll accidentally use them for chametz, then forget you turn them into a chametz dish and use it again on Pesach? We're not gozer, you'll forget twice. We're not gozer, you'll forget two things. We're only gozer, you'll forget one thing. And therefore, you can hang your Pesach dishes high up if you want, not above the stove where all the steam will get on them, but in the different part of your kitchen. Again, I've never seen anyone do it. Let's continue. However, says the Ramah, says there are continued. Here it's an interesting question. Everyone knows that the Torah, he idal, the Pharisee, he goes to me, Delphi, the Olam. Is that really true in Yotzmi Adofi Oliolam?
Sure, at some point it gets out.
Okay.
You put it back in the kiln. What about Levon? What would the Torah say?
You clay, purge it with water. Meaning you can't do Agala. Did the Torah ever say you can't do Levon to a clay cheres? So this is not so clear. The Gemara is a Havamina. Well, the Torah said to break it, so obviously you can't do Levon. But it's not true. The Gemara says explicitly, that at least theoretically, Liban works for a Klicheres. Oh, the Torah was made that you can't cleanse a Klicheres. Yeah, you can't cleanse a Klicheres, but Liban is not just cleansing it. Liban is like making it new. Liban is refurbishing it, not just cleansing it. And therefore, the Torah is never made that Liban doesn't work for a Klicheres. It's a little known fact. Liban actually works for a Klicheres. There is no kli that can't be kosher through Liban, at least if it's practical. If it's practical, again, there are many kalim who, which is just not practical to Liban too. But theoretically, everything can be kosher through Liban. There are no limits on Liban. Tosas asks, but the Torah is made, you can't kosher kli cheres. The answer is, you can't kosher kli cheres, but if you do Liban, it's like making a new kli cheres. Okay, whatever answer you want. It's clear in the Gemara that Liban works for kli cheres.
Liban kal too, or just Liban?
That is a big, big, big machlokas, which we will get to. That's a big machlokas, which we'll get to, Meretz
Hashem. What about with a blowtorch, the same as putting it to the kiln? Basically, a kiln is very hot now, and it, like, reforms.
Be'ikaron, a blowtorch would work for a kli cheres, but let's see the details. Okay, so why didn't they always do Liban to their kli cheres? Exactly. So the Gemara has a Gzeira. Theoretically, it for sure works. The Gemara takes it as a Dover Pashat, that theoretically it works. However, it's sort of a two-step process. This is a Gemara. I'm just going to sort of outside, say over in English, Shaklatari, the Gemara. Here we have Kli Cheres. Hagala doesn't work. Fundamentally doesn't work. Liban works. But there's two steps. What does Liban mean? Liban means, how did they do Liban in the old days? There were no blowtorches. They would just put coals, light coals all around, and that was Liban. Like put it mamish in coals, Liban. However, here's the tricky part. And you know how when you blowtorch things, like the sparks fly, right? Because the nitzotzos, nitazin himenu, sounds like sparks fly. So if you just light a big fire in something, sparks fly as well. I have a friend who has a medieval baker's oven, and he showed me once how he does Liban to it. He just builds a really strong fire inside, and the sparks fly. You don't need modern-day blowtorches or anything like that to get something. You know, again, even these medieval ovens run at much higher temperatures than our ovens when you're not koshering them, koshering when you are. They knew how to build ovens in medieval times. They also are very well insulated, unlike our ovens. Our ovens are, you know, moderately insulated, but it's not a big deal because who cares? In the medieval ovens, obviously they have to be more insulated. That's why you have, you know, discussions of they say hot for 24 hours, etc. Hilchos Bishul Akum or Hilchos Pasa Akum, etc. Now Shabbos, we also remember, you know, it stays hot for a whole day. Anyway, Viter. But the Gemara has the following problem. Let's say you have a pot, right? A cheres pot. Where does the fire go? Inside the pot or outside the pot? It
should go inside the pot.
Well, you normally build a fire outside the pot, right? You put your soup inside the pot and the fire under the pot. However, here's the problem. There are two types of kelim. If you have a kli sheheseko mibifnim, let's say you have a kli cheres that you normally put the fire inside it, such as a... What kind of kli do you normally build a fire inside? An oven, right? Then that's no problem. That's no problem. Just light a fire inside. Obviously, it has to be a strong fire. And you do libum. No big deal. However, what about a kli sheheseko mibachutz? Meaning you normally have a fire outside it. Kigon kedera. No one built a fire inside their pot. You put your soup in the pot. You built a fire outside, underneath your pot, or next to your pot. So here, what are the two options? You could kasher it by building a fire inside, or kasher it by building a fire outside. Do either of those options work? No. Right? Then you cannot kasher. Why? Because there are two options. If you build a fire outside, it's not effective. A fire outside is not an effective liban. Liban, the fire needs to be inside the kli. A fire outside the kli doesn't clean it well enough. Because the fire needs to be on the inside where the bliya is. So why don't I build a fire inside? I don't usually make a fire inside my pot. Well, I'll make a fire inside my pot. I'll fill it with coals and throw in a layer. Why can't I do that? Exactly, as Xera. Theoretically, work, but Xera, what's the chash?
That it might break.
Chaya said, like, right, exactly. This is Xera. Not allowed. Xera. Dilma. Chaya Salayu. After all, if it's not supposed to have a fire inside, and you build a fire inside, it'll usually crack. And therefore, what's about? A fire outside is not cleansing enough. And the fire inside will make it crack. And if you'll say, no problem, I'll build the fire inside to take my chances. If it cracks, it cracks. I haven't lost anything. It was treif anyway. And if it doesn't crack, then I win. No, we don't let you take your chances because we're afraid that in your head you don't want it to crack. So you won't build a proper fire. And you'll cut corners. That's the machayis alai. You'll cut corners because you're afraid of breaking your kli. Therefore, we just don't allow it at all as gzeirah d'rabbanan. And that's why when we say a kli cheres can't be kashered at all, theoretically, every kli can be kashered with liban. It's just that if it's a pot and not an oven, it can't be kashered at all because we mud shach. If the fire is outside, it won't be cleansing enough. If the fire is inside, we don't allow you to do that with d'rabbanan because we're afraid that you will cheat and cut corners. Let's read in the Mechaber. Aval hesek sheyisika ba'esh einu mo'al lehem lo l'shom kli cheres sheyishtab in Mechaber na'fil shalo yidil. Or, but a fire will not kasher these pots or any kli cheres, even if you didn't use it with dry heat. Even if you didn't use it on fire at all, she earless over roped it. Even if it only absorbed through iroi, can't be kashered. V'yesh osur afil b'kli sheni. When the Rav says yesh osur, he means we hold that yesh osur. We say even if you only use this pot with the, as a kli sheni, you didn't even do iroi kli bishon. You only, I don't know, you stuck it and ladled out of a cliche, or whatever the case may be. Still, that it's considered a chametz stick and can't be kashered at all. What's the chiddush here? The chiddush is, what's the mainstream sock? That b'di'evet is a cliche because of li or not?
Does not.
The mainstream sock is the b'di'evet, the machaber, the ramah, the cliche doesn't cause of li. But nonetheless, explains the Magen Avraham here, that even though Rov Rishonim hold the klisheni is not Bolea, Rov Rishonim say klisheni is not Bolea, the Magen Avraham quotes a whole list of Rishonim, he says, nonetheless, where Machmir, okay, he doesn't use the word Chomer Pesach, but the Mishnah Brura here does. If you look in the Mishnah Brura, Sif Katan, sorry, give me a second. Sifkatan, Yud Aleph, I hope it's here. What does he say? He says, Lechachila were machmer, even though it's a minority sheet of the Rishonim, were machmer, he doesn't use the word, but it seems clear, Chumber to Pesach, that were machmer, even if it absorbed through Klisheni, it's treif. This is not really about how to kashra things. This is really like a side tangent. You can't kashra Klicheres. When is a Klicheres chametz stick? If it was used on the fire, if you did Iru Klisheni to it, or even if it was used in a Klisheni. Klisheni quotes as Bliya. However, says the Mishnah Berurah here, based on the Magen Avraham, he says that if the Eved something only absorbed in a Klisheni, and then you cook your Pesachic food in it, so maybe you can rely on most Rishonim to say it was never Kamasik in the first place. So he says, well, if it's also a case of Einu Ben Yomo, and it's a case of a Hefzid or Simchas Yantif, then you can be Mekel Meshar Tzion. He says maybe even if it's either Ben Yomo or Nia Simchas Yantif. So basically, what do we say? There's nothing to do with Kashrut. It's really a tangent. The question is, did something become Chametzdik if it was used in a Klisheni? Right? A Kli used for Chametz in a Klisheni, we say, L'chatchila, we say it is Aser. Bidi Eved, in Bishel, Bo, B'Pesach, what do we say, Bidi Eved, if you cook in this Kli on Pesach? Then we say it depends. If there is no other Stadin Lahakel, then the food is Aser. If there's other Stadin Lahakel, then the food is Mutter. And then, what are the other Stadin Lahakel? So here, the Mishnah Berurah and the Shaar Tzion is very confused about this. What if it's Einu Ben Yomo? That's the Stadin Lahakel. We're not making any of Ben Yomo Pesach. It's Tzad Lahakel. What if it's Hefzer Meruba or Simchas Yantif, which are equivalent? So that's he's not 100% clear. He leaves us a bit of a tzarchion. What are other tzadim l'hakel, such as Eino Ben Yomo or Hefzid Yeruba / Simchas Yantif? Whether you need one tzadim l'hakel or two tzadim l'hakel, he's not so clear on. Certainly, if you need two tzadim l'hakel, even if you have one tzadim l'hakel, there's room to be mekel and say, but yeah, but it was never chametz kli in the first place. Okay, but there's a tangent, because it's not really about how to kashra things. It's really just a tangent they came in here. Let's finish up the seif then. The Gemara says, this is all coming from the Gemara, umihu, im hechziran lekivshan shebetzakru klicheris, if you put them back in the kiln, anyone ever see a pottery kiln? You know, in camp sometimes they have them? What if you had it back in the kiln? Will you manage to make it like new? Mutter. Then that's mutter. Why? The kemen shemachtisla has a godo kazev bade lo chayus alayu do apaki. Because when you put them in such a strong fire, that fire is so strong that it's not shy to say you'll cut corners afraid of it, because there's no way to cut corners. It's so strong that, in for a penny, in for a pound, as it were, that once you put it in there, it's in a really strong fire. The Rush also says that it's not so likely to break it, to crack in the kiln, because the fire is evenly spread out at all the sides. Avalotanum sholem lo, but just on putting an oven, not. Okay, what is the, nowadays, we actually have pottery kilns. If you have a klicheris that gets treif, you can kashrut by putting in a pottery kiln. What else the equivalent for Moshe writes? It's quoted in Rabbi Eider's book, Hilchos Pesach, and some other places, that a self-cleaning oven also counts like Hachzor L'Kivshonos. Meaning it's very hot. It's super duper hot. And it's not shy to cut corners. How do you cut corners in a self-cleaning oven? You know, like, you ever use a self-cleaning oven? Once you set it, you can't even open the door if you wanted to, right? It's so hot that there's no way to cut corners. It's not like, oh, I'll fill it with coals. Okay, I'll put so many coals and all, you know. So L'maisa, we assume that even if you have a klicheris, if it normally has a fire inside, build a fire inside. Shalom Yisrael, wonderful. Even if it normally doesn't have a fire inside, let's say it's a plate, right, which you do Iwer Kli Bishon onto, or etc., then you can still kashrut it by putting it in the kiln or in a self-cleaning oven. I personally, remember I made a caveat, I made a modon in front of two Eidim, that I take no responsibility, I have no choice, I have to take responsibility on Shamayim, if someone follows my advice, that's the right halacha. I take no responsibility when you will or won't break your kelim, I can just tell you stories. But Rav Moshe David Tendler told me that he actually followed his father-in-law's psak and put china dishes. Someone's bought tshuva, they treat dishes, which are expensive, put them in a self-cleaning oven, and they survived, and now they're kashered, because that counts as libun, even for a kliferis that normally doesn't have a fire inside it. He only gave one advice. He says, you can't put a stack of two dishes or more. You can't put a stack of dishes in the self-cleaning oven, because it's much like a kiln. They get soft and then harden again. So if you put two dishes, they'll get a little soft and hardened again. When you take them out, the bottom dish will have a round indentation from where the top dish sat on it. But if you only put one dish, you know, it'll take you many rounds in the self-cleaning oven. Only one dish, you know, you have three shelves. Each shelf, you put two dishes. Don't put them right on the grates, because then the grates will leave an indentation with them. Put them on a flat tray. Then you can kosher yourself in the oven. I never myself saw the dishes come out safely. Rav Moshe Dovid Teitelbaum told me that he did it. Maisa for Baal Tshuva wanted to, a family Baal Tshuva wanted to save their kosher, their expensive china. So you could theoretically kosher in a kiln or a self-cleaning oven. That's also one of the reasons why, for example, if you self-clean your oven for Pesach, right, or, you know, even though the inside of our ovens are shash of cheres, because they're made of ceramic, but still, self-cleaning cleans even cheres. Okay, so you could kosher in a self-cleaning oven. That's the equivalent of the end of this mechaber. Just the Ramah at the end of Aleph says, Kol kli atzarech libano agala asher l'shnamish bo afilu tzonein velo hechsher. Any kli that needs libano agala, you can't even use it for cold without kashering yet, like we saw in Kufchaf Aleph. Of course, what exception did we see?
Barai,
you can. And says the Magen Avraham, your Sukkot and Gimel, and the Mishnah Berura, you'll notice that, you know, as you go through Mishnah Berura's here, he generally copies over Magen Avraham's. That's his starting point. He's allowed to screen the Magen Avraham, but his general mahalach is to copy over Magen Avraham's and then work from there. The Mishnah Berura also says here in the third Magen Avraham, and it's Mishnah Berura Sifkatan in Sifkatan Tes Zion, that Derech Arai is much, even on Pesach, there's still a heter of Derech Arai. If you make sure that you don't have any shmutz on it. Okay, there's a Shari Tshuva here, quoted the Chacham Tzvi's Kula, 12 months, and said that, look, normally we don't rely on 12 months to use a Kli L'chachiva, but with other sudden L'chachil, we already discussed how sometimes we do. Sif Beis is an exception to Sif Aleph. Kubya. What's a kubya? It's discussed in the Gemara. Shu kli she'osim yilevenim ve'afar ve'ofin v'taynimo. It's a kli you make out of crushed bricks and dirt. And you bake and fry on it. In it. It's like a little curd. Chen tanner katan shekorin kirliya. And likewise, the small kind of oven. Haseko mi'bachotz asur lefos bo pesach de'im chamishmo niflokach. If you make a fire outside it, like underneath it, you can't use it on Pesach because, again, a fire outside is not effective in cleansing it. It's not effective enough to cleanse it. If you mill it, call me with them, shari, but if you fill it with coals inside its mutter, this is an exception, even though Sakhalin will explain. This is something that normally you put the fire outside it, underneath it, but they knew that these kubya things were very strong. They knew they were so strong that no one worried about them breaking. And therefore, it's mutter. So what do we say here? What's the exception here? If it's known that this type of kli won't break, then it's mutter. That is the chiddush of Sif Beis. That a kubya is not like a kedera, and this tanner katan is not like a kedera. It's known that if you put the fire inside, it won't break, so it's okay. Okay, I think we are going to have to call it a day for now. We're going to have to call it a day now. We will, try and maybe speed as much as we can. Be'ezrat Hashem next time on Tuesday. So we'll pick up Tuesday. First question.
Is this a Sif Bet about Kubya? Does that apply to any Kli Cheres that we know won't break? That you put your column in the inside.
Yes. If everyone knows it won't break, that's fine. I don't know how many Kli Cheres like that we have nowadays, I must admit. But yes.
Those who are machmir on glazed for totaling, they're still going to be machmir on trafe, right? I mean, I'm not going to say, oh, it's covered with school space, so if you want to make it on a cash room.
Correct. There are... correct. That's before Schlater and the Simon that were Machmor and Gleis. For Kashering, there are basically three Shitos. The Shita of the Minig of Eretz Yisrael and many people in America is that they're Machmor both ways. If Cheres is Gleis, they consider it Cheres to be Machmor for Kashering and Glass to be Machmor for Tovelin without a Bracha. The Minig of many people in Eretz Yisrael, including the Rosh Yeshiva of YU, is that they're consistent, that they lean on the Cheres side. They consider it like Cheres for Kashering, that you can't Kasher it. And they consider it like Cheres for Tovelin, you don't have to Tovel it. The Psak of Rav Abadi is that he's Makel both ways. He considers it glass, Leinyan, Kashering, that he doesn't have to, that you don't have to Kasher it. And he considers Cheres that you Tovelin, you don't have to Tovel it. But that is not mainstream Orthodox Judaism.
You mean,
that is really only for the Talmidim of Rav Abadi.
Then you could Kasher it.
Then you could. He says you don't even have to Kasher it because he's far. He says glass doesn't absorb and doesn't need to be Kasher. Yes. So, those are Talmidim of Rav Abadi are Makel both ways. Many people, including in Eretz Yisrael, most people are Machmer both ways. And many people in America, including in YU, are treated L'chumra for Kashering and L'kula for Tovelin. Okay, so to be continued, Amir Tashem, on Tuesday.
It's not mainstream, it's not Orthodox.
It is Orthodox, but it's not mainstream. No, no, no. The Rav Abadi is...